At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitin, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody. I am John Pollock alongside Waiting. And tonight, it is time to play Rewind and Arson.
Oh, yeah. Not the first time we've had to discuss arson in wrestling.
No, not even in AEW. I mean, I think this is the first time we've seen like a physical structure lit on fire. Like we had Jack Perry torched
in AEW, yeah, but I mean in wrestling, come on.
Oh no, in wrestling
this happens all the time, you know. It's just another week.
Yeah, we will that segment was something else.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it.
Okay, well let's keep everyone in suspense for what is coming up. What is coming up later on this week, we have got a number of shows dropping. On Thursday, Wei and I are going to be going over Beast from the East as WWE traveled to Sumo Hall for a card July of 2015. They spent the 4th of July in Tokyo for a 5-match card that we will review featuring Finn Balor challenging Kevin Owens for the NXT Championship, which is the real main event of this show because then they followed it with a like 25-minute epitome of a house show main event as John Cena and Dolph Ziggler take on Kane and King Barrett.
Yes. What a blast from the past. Yeah. This was all, 9 years ago, this show?
Yes.
A long time ago. And a lot of things have changed since then. So let's just kind of talk about the roster from 2015. And I think a bit of a different feeling type of show. This was like a network exclusive and felt like a combination of NXT and WWE at the time. So I think a lot of interesting things to talk about just because a lot of things have changed in 9 years.
Yeah, it's really crazy. It's a pay-per-view involving Pac as he takes on Chris Jericho. Kevin Owens involved in the title picture and Kofi Kingston down for the count against Brock Lesnar. All of that will be discussed as we go back to July of 2015 on Rewind Away. Jump on board postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days access and multiple shows per week, minimum of 3 each week coming your way, including 2 Rewind Aways this month. We're also going to have an edition of Talk that Wei and I are going to sit down to record later this month. We've got MCU Hater, which morphs into MCU later on this month. Madam Web will be reviewed next week. And then it's on to, what's the show? Agatha's whatever?
Agatha All Along, yes.
Of course, All Along it was Agatha. That one does not quite have my has sparked my interest, but Madam Web, I will sit down and watch Madam Web in preparation for your thoughts, Wei, to be exposed to everyone next week.
If I have to do it, then I'm going to take you with me. Yeah.
Also, a Destruction in Kobe event will be going down later this month. Karen and Bruce will have you covered. So lots of great stuff. And of course, Collision every Saturday night. And Friday, we are tackling not just SmackDown, but it is a total of 5 hours of wrestling that is happening on Friday night. So Wei and I are splitting up duties on Friday night. We are still going to be starting at our usual start time of 10 Eastern. Wei is going to watch SmackDown. I am going to watch Collision. I'm not sticking around for Rampage. And then we will reconvene. We will trade notes on Friday night to send everyone into the weekend with our thoughts. And then we're back Saturday.
A big couple of shows on Friday night. It's the last SmackDown on Fox, and it's the last AEW programming before All Out.
It is, yeah. Do you think they'll have a scathing promo about Fox at the end? Probably not.
Yeah, probably. Unlikely.
Maybe they'll put together a highlight reel of the best of the Fox years, and it's just going to start in like 2022.
And they can set Green Day to it. Another goodbye to Fox. Maybe that's just sort of the default goodbye Fox theme.
Yeah. Maybe they could just, I know he's on the injured list right now, maybe they could give Noam Dar the ability to say goodbye to Fox.
Yes.
All right. All of that can be found postwrestling.com and postwrestlingcafe.com. Just a few news items. We went over a lot of this on Pollock and Thurston today, so I encourage people to go check that out. Our new start time is Wednesdays at 1 Eastern, beginning today. And we went in pretty heavily into the lawsuit that was filed by Kevin Kelly and the Tate twins, Brandon and Brent, against AEW, Tony Khan, and Ian Riccaboni. And there's a lot to this suit. Not only the fact that there is... defamation, breach of contract, and potentially misclassification of employees. So they are tackling a lot in this lawsuit, and just kind of getting to the core of it is the fact that in AEW's contracts, you do have to seek out arbitration for a dispute. So number one, they kind of have to get that thrown out. It's in some ways, it's the same thing that Janelle Grant is fighting, because in those contracts, or in the NDA, we should say, that she signed, arbitration was the venue as well. And they are trying to get arbitration thrown out so that they can have a trial. So the AEW contracts are worded similar. And then on top of that, you have, you know, this issue, this outstanding issue with Kevin Kelly, where he was let go back in March, and he is alleging that he was defamed by Ian Riccaboni with a Discord post that we had talked about when this all went down, and Kevin Kelly had, you know, hinted as much in interviews that he was considering a legal option. We didn't know that it would be coming in this form, and with the Tates involved, that we did not hear too much about beyond they were part of cuts back in April, and then the reason that they stated they were given was budget cuts. And then Tony Khan was publicly asked about them and had a different reason, that they had missed some shows. So they believe that they, they're making their defense about those shows that they did miss. So anyway, they are seeking in excess of $50,000. They are seeking a jury trial, and AEW did give out a just pretty much standard answer when they were contacted by Stephen Mielhausen from SI.com that AEW does not comment on pending litigation. And I don't know if we'll get much more beyond that when and if Tony Khan is asked about this, because he is hosting a media call on Thursday going into All Out. But I would think this topic will at least be brought up because it's so fresh. But I don't know if Tony Khan, under the best of circumstances, when it comes to anything legal, he pretty much is not going to be, I think, going much beyond this boilerplate statement that they put out.
It would be a real surprise if he said anything more than this company.
Let me break down this whole case and how it's going to go, guys. Get your pens out. Yeah. I think that...
mm-hmm. Well, I know you can't see into the future, but if you had to predict, do you think this goes to any sort of trial, or do you think it gets put away with...
I'd be very surprised if this got to the trial stage. I mean, just so many of these cases do not make it that far. It's always interesting when the subject comes up, and it seems every couple of years we have this discussion about the classification of specifically pro wrestlers with WWE, but it can't extend to AEW, even though there are differences between the two. You know, this has always been something that has been brought up. And if you had the resources to truly take this to in front of a judge, how would that judge interpret these professional wrestling contracts and the freedoms that they have? It's not just having an exclusive contract with a company that's going to label you as an employee versus independent contractor. There are several other like boxes to check, and we kind of went over some of them today with Brandon. But I'm always curious if like a judge would look at this and if they would have a very favorable view towards pro wrestlers and stating with all of these things, you should be employees. You should be able to benefit from the ways in which an employee with a company should be able to enjoy these things. But to get back to your question, I think like these things are exceptionally costly. And I think it's going to be tough. You have a lot that are piled in here. Like just on the plaintiff side, like the Tates are two of the plaintiffs and like they have nothing against Ian Riccoboni, who is one of the defendants. Like there is no connective tissue here. Like it's almost like it's separate cases that are all lumped into this one lawsuit. And when it comes to defamation, like it's, I said this today, it's a very high bar in the U.S. to be able to prove. And I'm certain that a lot of people are going to be sympathetic to Ian Riccoboni's side, that even if you want to read his comment that he made on the Discord channel, does that reach the level of being defamatory towards Kevin Kelly? He believes it does. But again, it's very hard to be able to prove defamation and succeed in that. But that's only one of the elements to this case.
All right.
So anyway, we will continue to follow this. It's an interesting case, to say the least. Odyssey Jones, the follow-up that we have heard since Monday comes from Fightful, who had reported that Odyssey Jones was removed from WWE TV when domestic violence allegations came to WWE's attention. I know Brandon had been searching out any arrest records or anything and was not able to come up with anything. And WWE, they have still been quiet about the status of Odyssey Jones. There is the belief that he's no longer with the company, but that has not been stated outright. And I hope that there is some clarity regarding that, of whether he is, in fact, gone from the company. It's assumed he is gone, but again, the company has not commented yet about this story and Jones at this point. Obviously, whatever came to their attention was enough that they felt they had to take action, because, you know, we have seen performers that have had allegations against them in the past, and there are ones that they have kept on television or stayed with, and then there's others that they have cut ties with, and this would appear to be one of the latter.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he was in the middle of, I would say a storyline. I'm not going to say a huge storyline.
Absolutely, he was in the middle of a storyline. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess his role did sort of arrive at like a natural, sort of chaptered end. But I felt like there was clear indication that there was more for him going on. So, I mean, that already raises enough flags. So, and I think the amount of mystery surrounding this particular release, I mean, just kind of seems to further speculation. Yeah.
And then we're just going to wrap up here. Two ratings notes to make mention of. AEW had back-to-back nights of really bad numbers. On Friday night for Rampage, the show ended up doing 218,000 viewers and a 0.07 in the 18 to 49 demo. This would be the second lowest viewership in Rampage's history. Regardless of time switches or changes of night, this was the second lowest ever for Rampage. And this did coincide this past weekend with the return of college football that I'm sure had some impact on this number. But again, this is second lowest of all time. College football has been around every year that Rampage has as well. Saturday, Collision, this also coinciding with many college football games and several hours after the Bash in Berlin show that we have seen, always typically does a number on Collision and its audience. It fell to viewership of 289,000 viewers and a 0.10 in the 18 to 49 demographic. So this was the show's lowest viewership excluding preemptions since it launched in June of last year. So and a 35% decline in viewership from last week, 18% drop in the 18 to 49 audience. Amazingly, males 18 to 34 slightly up from the week prior. So men 18 to 34, they got in their wrestling, they got in their football, and they were not going to miss some collision on top of it on Saturday. But not great numbers for Rampage. I mean, Rampage is sort of, it is where it is at the at this point. But just to see both of these numbers back to back, like we are talking about, you know, in the ballpark of all-time lows for these shows.
Well, I think Collision is starting to get the closer to Rampage territory than I think, you know, feeling like it's sort of a, an equal level show to AEW Dynamite. This particular Collision from last week didn't have anything announced for it until I think after Rampage. And it just kind of gives the impression that like they aren't even trying. This week's Collision is different. It feels like they're making an effort with this special Friday edition of Collision.
Well, they are, but I mean, man, this Friday, I mean, they're going up against
really
the
tough,
last SmackDown on Fox. I mean, just going against SmackDown, period. I don't know if the last one on Fox really has much attention to it, but you're coming off the event from Saturday. It's you're going up against SmackDown. You're not on your regular night. I think this is going to be I do not foresee Collision doing well on Friday night at all. And the question is going to be the impact just that college football has on Collision during this season. Like, yes, you're going to have the PLEs once a month to contend with, but it's also football. And is Collision going to be like, I don't think this past Saturday maybe is indicative of a normal week, but I mean, you are seeing this slide and how many people are kind of making that less and less of a priority on Saturday nights, regardless of what they have announced. But those were your ratings notes, and that's about all. So we will be covering All Out this Saturday. Again, as soon as the pay-per-view ends, Wei and I will be live this Saturday night at a hopefully respectable time.
Sure. Yep.
Tonight's show, Wei, was from the UW Panther Arena in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ever been?
Never. No. Milwaukee itself, I don't think I have. You?
Maybe drove through Milwaukee. I've never stopped in Milwaukee. Can't say I've been there, but seemed like
someday.
A nice town. 2,448 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix. And out to start is Daniel Garcia, who storms to the ring. And he is not going to wait until All Out to break MJF's neck. So MJF appears in the crowd, and he's flanked by security and tells Garcia, "I'm going to paint the canvas red with your blood and break your neck," and calls him a skinhead hooked on Ozempic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, which is like, I guess, a very topical drug.
That's the go-to, I think, for a pro wrestling insult, if you're bringing up a drug. Well, Daniel Garcia reaches into his bag of insults and brings up that MJF is fake and has to cover up his acne, and says that you even went to Turkey for a hair transplant that didn't even work. That's how fake you are. And you have a fake love for AEW. And I think I was thinking the same thing every single person was thinking. I'm like, this dude's got ink on his calf for this company. And Garcia covers this. He's like, even with your fake tattoo. I was like, okay, there you go. You've covered it. You've covered all his bases here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, the sentiment is that, I guess, despite him having a tattoo, it's still an insincere love. Sure.
That would be actually an amazing spot if one day his like boot is taken off and it's revealed like it was a fake tattoo, and he just did that for to endear himself to the crowd, but it was a bullshit tattoo.
I don't think he was suggesting that the tattoo was fake. It's just his
Garcia said it. Garcia called it fake.
Did he say those exact words?
He says he has a fake tattoo.
Oh, okay. I thought he was just insinuating like the sentiment being fake.
He could have meant both. Garcia says he's obsessed with ruining MJF's life, wants him to suffer, and I want the people that love you to suffer too. So if you ever manage to stay with a woman for longer than a year, I want you to marry that woman. I want you to buy a house with her, and I want you to have a child. And every time you pick up that ugly child, you're going to have a tingle down your body as a result of what I did to you. And one day when your child asks you, "Were you ever a wrestler?" you're going to have to tell them, "I was a wrestler until Daniel Garcia ended my career." this was, I mean, a lot of people were raving about Daniel Garcia's promo last week. This was his best promo. This was tremendous, I thought. Yeah. And MJF says, even MJF is impressed here. He's like, wow, when did you learn how to talk? And says, you've still got a lot to learn. I did a favor dropping you on your head, teaching you not to trust anyone. These fans are fickle. They loved me until they didn't. They'll do the same to you. And I will protect you by putting you into a wheelchair. And then your mother can take care of you. And it won't be the first time she's had a man on her back that she's tending to in that bed. So Garcia has to be restrained by security, but breaks free and makes his way all the way through the crowd up to MJF, who has a glass bottle and breaks it in Daniel Garcia's face. And Garcia is down and he's bloodied. And MJF just sits next to him and says, you woke up something dormant in me, and you have to go through hell to get to paradise. And on Saturday, I'm going to send you to paradise. And then he kisses the wound and gets all the blood all over his mouth. Totally disgusting. And that was our angle. I thought Garcia in particular was outstanding in this segment.
Oh, this was a great segment. I really think Garcia has taken a big step up in a short amount of time. I mean, this talent, I think, has been there this whole time, but he hasn't been able to show it until these past couple weeks. On the mic, he was here arguably against the best talker in the business. And I thought that he felt like he belonged. You know, they gave him some really nice jabs against MJF, the acne, the hair transplant. Those are great, like sort of like make us laugh type of superficial jabs. But then he got a lot deeper, you know, wishing that MJF could find somebody to be in a relationship for longer than 1 year, and then wishing that he could have an ugly child just so that he could pick him up and be reminded of the tingles in his spine every time he picked them up. Like, that's great cerebral heel stuff. So by this point, I really do feel like Daniel Garcia has done a really good job of shedding that sort of sports entertainer, you know, type of story, type of character from his I think reputation. No dancing whatsoever. I don't even want to see it, certainly in the match itself. I think they've done a great job of creating a serious tone for this entire program in a short amount of time. He's still somebody who I think is lacking in credibility of wins. And, you know, he's not, I don't even remember the last time he had, what was his last pay-per-view match even?
I'd have to look it up because he's been off for like several
months. He's what you would consider certainly like mid card. I would even say for most of the year, like lower mid card, sometimes not even appearing at all. But this is him taking a step up into the upper level against somebody like MJF. So he still really lacks that credibility. And I don't really see that changing after this match. I don't see MJF losing again so soon after losing to Will Ospreay. So I'm very curious to see what they have for Garcia coming out of this to keep him at this level, to keep him strong, and to hopefully keep him in a lower upper card type of level.
He's done one pay-per-view this year, losing to Christian at Revolution. Great segment here to kick things off, and I think one of the more intriguing matches on the pay-per-view this Saturday. Renee is with the conglomeration with Will Ospreay, and Mark Briscoe has his words of wisdom and does his regular deal here, mimicking a phone call he had with Kyle O'Reilly, who was mouthing the words that Mark Briscoe is repeating.
This was quite the other end of the phone call we had on Collision.
That's right, exactly. Had to see this to appreciate it. And the word of the day is stupendous. Continental Championship, Kazuchika Okada versus Kyle Fletcher. It is announced that the Continental title will be defended in a four-way at All Out, where the winner of this match will defend against the three winners of matches taking place on Collision. Those matches will be Orange Cassidy against Brian Keith, Lance Archer versus Mark Briscoe, and Konosuke Takeshita against Beast Mortos.
Yeah, so just even from the matchups, like, I think we can presume who's going to win those matches. It'll very likely be Okada versus Orange Cassidy versus Konosuke Takeshita, and maybe a bit more of a toss-up here between Archer and Briscoe, but I'm probably going with Mark Briscoe.
I don't see Archer pinning Briscoe.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you have it. Okada and Fletcher for the Continental Championship, Don Callis on commentary, and Fletcher's right arm is wrapped up. And Okada is delivering these strikes as Okada is yelling, Aussie, 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 as he is delivering the strikes. Lands the elbow off the top and does the middle finger pose, but the Rainmaker is countered with the Michinoku driver, and Fletcher had an answer every time for this Rainmaker. So Fletcher stops a tombstone, hits a vertical drop brainbuster onto the edge of the apron to Okada. They go through two picture-in-picture breaks, and then Okada, digging in deep, applies the money clip, and it was very clear Excalibur was the only one who knew the name of this. And Fletcher manages to break out of it. They fight by the barricade, and Fletcher hits a brainbuster on top of the barricade and then dives over the barricade onto Okada. Then it's Fletcher doing his own Rainmaker pose, and Okada counters a tombstone, hits the short arm clothesline, and the crowd starts chanting one more time. I mean, Okada was their babyface in this match. He ducks a Rainmaker. Okada lands the drop kick, and then Fletcher blocks another one, hits the leaping tombstone, and then Okada shoves Fletcher toward referee Rick Knox, allowing for the momentary distraction, and Okada kicks him low, hitting the Rainmaker in 19 minutes and 25 seconds.
I thought it was a very good match. Yeah, they're flirting with the time limit here. I think Okada plays like a really good heel. And at this point, I wonder if that's even a hot take, because I sense a lot of people don't like this version of Okada and want the New Japan one. Everybody, I don't think the New Japan one would work on a weekly basis, you know, here. I think they want to give him this character in order to give him a weekly presence and to allow him to get by without speaking a whole lot. We're going to get babyface Okada eventually, but I think as a way to start off his run on North American television, I think this is a great role for him, and it's him showing off like a brand new side of him that I'm really happy to see, because I was one of those people who was really sick of, I think, you know, the typical New Japan main event Okada for a long, long time. So I'm really enjoying this run. And this match was really all about Kyle Fletcher. Like Daniel Garcia, I think Fletcher has taken a big step up in perception. Like a year ago, this match in New Japan would have been, you wouldn't have been able to consider it at all, you know, the fact that Kyle Fletcher could go 20 minutes with a Kazuchika Okada. But here I was able to buy it, because Fletcher looks so good in ring next to Okada. He's gained like so much confidence in himself and in his character that he feels like he's, you know, somebody who's just kind of bubbling on the surface, somebody that you might consider like a modern pillar, you know, of this company. It's just about to break out. So I thought the match was great.
I think Fletcher has ascended to that role, and I just want to see this guy get some key wins. Like, this is it's a story they've done quite a bit in AEW of the guy that, you know, brings the fight to the established star and then just falls in the end. I think what they really need is one of these guys that is just going to get those key wins and really establish themselves, because you can go up and down this roster. It's like everyone sees like the talent that a Kyle Fletcher has, and that goes across the board. And you just look at the timing of this, like he had the loss to Ricochet, but then had that amazing match over the weekend with Ishii. And it's like, for me, it's like, I would just want to see this guy ascending. And maybe now was not the timing for this Okada match. But to your point, this match was more about Fletcher than it was Okada. I think it's just making sure you don't miss the mark on this guy.
Absolutely. And they have a big show coming up in Australia a while from now, I'm going to say. But hopefully by that time, Kyle Fletcher will become like somebody that you might be able to depend on to challenge for the world title, or maybe even be champion by that point.
Takeshita checks on Fletcher, and then he has words for Okada. So for everyone's question about when will we get Takeshita and Okada in the ring, and we had suggested maybe the tournament at the end of the year, maybe it's going to be All Out. Because I don't see Takeshita losing to Beast Mortis.
Well, it's going to be the four-way, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So now the four-way is interesting because it offers an opportunity for Okada to drop the championship without actually getting pinned. But we also know that hasn't he said that he's entering the Continental Classic this year?
I think that was stated.
Yeah, so, I mean, either way, I guess he could be on a path to win the championship back. I'm thinking more that he retains and Takeshita still becomes like the one we're focusing on, maybe to win the Continental Classic, but they're drawing direct allusions to Okada versus Konosuke Takeshita. So for all of us that might have been concerned that Takeshita would kind of get lost in the shuffle post G1, doesn't seem to be the case. I think they're making a big case to, you know, build him up against Okada here.
I would like to see the person that is the champion that has to enter the tournament has some advantage. Like there's a purpose for having this title, because it almost makes this title, like, for someone that challenges Okada like a month before the tournament, like there should be that incentive to be the champion when you give it up for this tournament, that you're the number one. You get something, like there should be.
I guess I don't know if a buy.
It's tough to do in a round robin scenario, but they're almost.
You get a nice necklace. How about a bracelet, okay, to commemorate your...
I think bracelets have been a little exhausted. Maybe we can come up with another trinket of sorts.
Right.
They showed this video that they had put on their social media of Swerve with Prince Nana purchasing his childhood home. And this is shown with photos of him when he was younger. They fell on hard times. Their house was foreclosed on. And he made a promise at that time that one day he would buy this house back. This was like a nice feel-good video. By the end of tonight, folks, stay tuned. If you miss the show, this ended up being an amazing payoff.
Boy, I love this. I mean, first of all, let's mention them putting this out online in the afternoon. I think that was necessary to sort of tell us the timeline, to set things up for the timeline, because there's no way Hangman Page, of course, would have been able to go to wherever this is. Did they mention where this was?
Did they say
Washington?
I don't know.
There's no way Paige would have been able to get there if they had saved this video to air on Dynamite itself, right? So they have to put this in the afternoon, and I guess Paige caught the next flight out of town to wherever this was.
He had his super GPS. He was ready. Yeah. He found it.
But the feeling of this was, I think, so great. Like it felt like something you'd see on, like, I don't know, like a sappy reality TV show of somebody like being able to finally like, achieve a lifelong dream. This is something that I think everybody dreams about, you know, to buy your childhood home for your parents when they were kicked out. I mean, it was a wonderful setup for it. And I almost even wonder if part of the thinking of showing Swerve signing that new contract was to set this moment up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't grow up with the idea, without having the idea of torching your childhood home for a pro wrestling angle?
They found a great looking home, like, to a torch, wouldn't you say?
This is a small
investment.
It's
kind of like, you know, like you could buy the story here really well. Like it's kind of run down a little bit. Yeah.
I wonder what the comparables are like in the neighborhood. I don't know what this would set them back.
You got to go on House Sigma, really.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Jamie Hayter versus Robin Renegade, short match here. Saray and Harley Cameron are watching in the back, and Hayter fires back with this drop kick, hits a three consecutive backbreakers and the Haterade to get the victory. But no angle shot with Jamie Hayter and Saraya, which maybe we could get Friday, but I assume we're getting that at the pay-per-view.
You are? Because I don't know. At this point, it almost seems like they might be delaying it, because I feel like they would have hit it a little harder on this show. You know, well, they had Saraya watching. Yeah. How many women's matches do we have on? We got Willow versus Statlander. We've got Monet versus Shida.
I think that's it.
Yeah, nothing with Mariah May.
Mariah May is not listed on the show yet. Again, we don't have all the full card yet. I assume we're still going to get
some. I could see them actually saving this one.
Perhaps. Yeah. You do have Arthur Ashe coming up as well. Like they have to hit that show hard because that show's struggling as we are 3 weeks out from Grand Slam.
I think Haters, this was a really nice showcase for Jamie Hayter. Robin Renegade did a great job of making Hayter's offense look really good. But I think an in-arena promo wouldn't hurt. But maybe it's because of the fact that she's not on All Out that they might want to save some of that for after the cycle.
Roderick Strong is complaining to Christopher Daniels that his foot was under the rope last week. Thankfully, they didn't replay the footage because... Way would have had to be subjected to Aubrey leaping over his leg to call for the bell.
Subject to a lot of hate online for defending that that spot.
Hook agrees it was a bad call, and we can settle this tonight. And Roderick explains, "I'm not going to fight you in this dump of a city, but I'll call my shot soon, and you'll be the first to know about it." So this is our Kevin Owens segment where he was offered the title shot and not on his schedule. Maybe he was thinking, you know what, Hook, we gotta move tickets for Grand Slam in a couple of weeks. We've got the 5-year anniversary show. This pay per view tonight, we can't give this out on just a couple segments' notice. So yeah, this is we gotta wait for this one.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's that. I'm thinking Grand Slam, you know, just with Hook and I believe.
I was thinking this would be on the buy-in on Saturday.
I guess that's possible. Yeah, here I am last week defending the spot saying, this is a great way to build to a match in 2 weeks, and they might not even be doing it in 2 weeks. So, I feel like if they were going to make the match, they probably would have made it tonight. So, yeah, it's fine.
Marina Shafir is destroying dudes backstage, and John Moxley accompanies her. They walk past the Elite, and Moxley walks up to Jack Perry and says, "I don't care what they say. You're a sweet kid."
Yeah, interesting. So we know the Elite is feuding with the BCC, but here's Moxley showing that he's not with that war. He's, in fact, trying to draw allegiances with the Elite.
And a notable absence later when the Elite were beating down the BCC 4-on-3.
That's right, so yeah.
They walk out to the ring, and Moxley asks if Darby is somewhere in Milwaukee, but he's not. He said that he wrestled a kid no one had heard of several years ago. I beat the piss out of him for 20 minutes, and afterwards, I smiled, or he smiled, and I realized then that he was special. Because he plays the game the way it should be played, knowing it's a privilege to perform in front of these people, not something you're entitled to. And he wants to talk to Darby Allin, and he doesn't want to apply pressure. So don't make him. And he leaves with Marina Shafir. So my thought here is that it is going to be John Moxley that is going to train Darby for this title match against Bryan Danielson.
Interesting. Okay. Now, as a babyface?
This certainly came off as, like, babyface, John Moxley.
Yeah, well, but the interaction with the Elite did not, right?
So, I think this is less, like, just babyface heel, and it's, like, it's consistent with John Moxley that has always had a respect for the audience, but that takes him, like, this guy can go in whatever direction you really need. Like, this is not, like, some big adjustment to the John Moxley persona. Like, he's playing the same guy, but he has now some vested interest in what I believe is Bryan Danielson. He's already got 1 foot out the door, and that's not enough to compete at this level. It's not respecting the championship like a guy like Darby is. And that should be the story, is that he's going to prepare Darby to beat Bryan Danielson.
Possible, very possible. I feel like it might be more. We know Darby has that title shot coming up, and I think that might be very likely for Wrestle Dream.
They had stated the title shot was for Grand Slam, but I'm with you, and I think Wrestle Dream makes a whole lot more sense for those two in Washington.
Yeah, yeah. But I do get more get the sense that we might be building to a feud between Moxley and Darby with all of this. And I see Mox taking a bit more of like a directly heel sort of character. I find it really interesting how like what they're doing with Marina Shafir. I mean, Shafir is essentially Moxley's muscle. You know, she's his bodyguard who's just kind of like taking people out, all these poor security guards that are just like standing there in their way. So it's an interesting way of framing Shafir. I don't even know if like they're not even showing their hand about like where they want to slot Shafir in the women's division right now. She's China. You know, she's playing China, who's just sort of like his bodyguard, a part of like Mox's storyline. So I find it all still very interesting 2 weeks in.
Yeah. There's also the way you could go if you want to push this with Darby is Moxley could face Darby at Grand Slam, and that sets up who with the title shot at stake to set up Wrestle Dream as well. Because Danielson and Moxley is a big match that you can do. That
I could see
that
being.
Would explain this like fracturing of the BCC.
Sure, yeah. And you know, with like Moxley and Danielson, it'll probably be a lot more philosophical than just like, I want to win the championship. Like, it'll probably be something like what you were alluding to earlier. But as a way to get to Moxley versus Danielson, I think you need Mox to be a lot more like of a direct heel. And this is probably our path towards that direction.
Renee interviewed the Learning Tree. And again, we are reminded of Orange Cassidy ruining Jericho's jacket. And they showed the footage from July of 2020 and the vat of orange juice being dumped on his jacket. And that is the impetus for Brian Keith to beat Orange Cassidy on Collision. And Orange Cassidy walks in and states, if Brian Keith can beat him, he will pay Jericho his $7,000 in cash. The lingering question is if he will take into account inflation over the past 4 years.
Sure. Yeah. Probably not. I don't know if Orange Cassidy is, you know, one to calculate that. So what is this leading to? I mean,
Orange
I think
Cassidy beating Brian Keith, and that's it.
I really want to see $7,000 in cash. Just I want to see on like what that looks like. You know, I guess not that impressive, but probably like a nice little bag.
Yeah, these two are fighting over $7,000, and we just had in storyline Will Ospreay pay what was it, $127,000 to attack MJF in the go home segment for All In.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, the realities of these storyline monetary figures. I was like, I don't know how
much should a jacket cost to sound impressive? I mean, it can't.
Well,
they
keep bringing up that $7,000 is it couldn't be the real price. Like seven, that's crazy talk. It couldn't be $7,000. And
it was probably
got it at Goodwill. It was probably like $75.
Sure. Yeah, I thought he meant his light up jacket for some reason, and I guess he Jericho never had the light up jacket, did he? In AEW,
he's had it.
Didn't he have that destroyed? Yeah, didn't
he
have that?
He's done it all. Yeah, he's done it all. Mm-hmm. That was probably around a $7,000 jacket, maybe more. Mm-hmm. Mariah May and Nyla Rose for the women's title. We have May attacking her with slaps, and then Rose catches her with body slams and a leg drop, and
John Cena, Orange will lose and then pay in pennies. Amazing.
That's one way to go. May applies a guillotine as they return from break, and Rose charges into the buckle and hits an avalanche. Beast Bomb is stopped, and then Rose rolls through on a high cross, hitting the world's strongest slam. And then on the floor, May yanks out the leg on the steps and hits a running knee smash, and she wants to win by countout. Rose beats the count at 9. Right into another knee strike and the Storm Zero as Mariah May wins. Kind of match that didn't have a whole lot of heat to it. And it was kind of just there on the show. It was like, well, Toni Storm is not here. She's in Australia promoting Grand Slam next month or in February. And that's that. And Mariah May is in a holding pattern.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the crowd energy was pretty low for this one. It was technically fine, this match, but I didn't, there's nothing about it that I think, you know, was all that compelling. And You don't panic over like one match, but it does give me a little bit concern about Mariah May's appeal without Toni Storm. Her entire life in AEW has been based around Toni Storm. I mean, to this point, like her finish is Toni Storm's finish, and they could be building to a rematch right away. But I think this is also time for her to start building something new with somebody else, and at least like what the, you know, they had almost no build for this Nyla Rose title match. So maybe you don't think that this is anything to be concerned about, but at least this straight up match without sort of the momentum of like a Toni Storm rematch on its way. I didn't think that there was much for the crowd to latch onto.
Mercedes and first we had a Deonna Purrazzo video, and she is going through a rut that all artists do. And she lost the Texas Bull Rope match to Thunder Rosa, but she's not done making art. She's just starting. And that art is going to include losing to Hikaru Shida on Collision on Friday.
Yeah, I found this pretty interesting because this was a nice looking, well produced piece of video. You know,
they've done a few of these with Deonna in this setting, but I think mainly they run on Collision.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, what, are you investing all this time into this only to have her lose to Shida, who's competing for the championship on Saturday? So we'll see how they handle that.
Mercedes and Camille came out, and they did air highlights of the win against Momo Watanabe last Friday, and Monet talked about the win against Momo, calling, saying that Shida cannot call herself the ace when you aren't the face of this. And the crowd started chanting, "Holy Shida!" And there is a price to pay when you mess with Mercedes. Shida appears on the screen and says, "You can't beat the ace," and she was one katana away from beating Mercedes when your watchdog cost me the match. And Christopher Daniels, having a busy night, bans Camille from ringside at All Out. And then the way that you connect a Japanese star to your English speaking audience, she said, "Sayonara, bitch."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they must teach that there in, like, you know, English class.
It's probably for every wrestler in the dojo. Like, that's when they sit you down at the end, when they explain like how pro wrestling works, and then they teach you, this is how you insult an American.
I'm almost like a bit sad that this is only a 2-week build for what is a bit of a throwaway, you know, match for Mercedes, because I think there's a lot more potential to tell a bigger story with Hikaru Shida. I actually think she's the best English promo of all the Japanese wrestlers that's in AEW, and you got to see that here, you know, be able to show off a bit more range than what you might be used to. She, I think, is doing a great job. She's improved a lot with her English promos, and I almost wish that we could see a lot more of that than just these two. This was it, really, just this promo.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it in the past. I find Shida to be in a tough role where she just almost seems to always get over in these roles, but I think there's a limit to the amount of times that she's kind of put in as the makeshift challenger for a couple week build, has a very good match. Crowd will, like, they started chanting for her during Mercedes promo. Like, there's something there. But it does become sort of like it's a challenge that you understand. This is just they're there to have a good match. It's not because this is a dramatic tease of a title change coming up on Saturday. The Elite are backstage, and Jack Perry brings up All Out 2021 being in the ring when Danielson arrived in this company, and he vowed one day it would be his turn to stand in the ring with Danielson. And I was sitting at home when I heard the news that Danielson's career was winding down, and I thought I had missed my chance. So I changed who I was. I went to Japan. I sold my own t-shirts. And Danielson, you could have helped me, but you didn't. And I did think that requires some explanation. I don't know how you do it in a digestible way. Even if it's not so much like the disciplinary committee, I just think, right, like he said it multiple times, and those that might be able to connect the dots there. But
do you think he was explicitly talking about the disciplinary committee, like Brian's role on the disciplinary committee, or could it just be interpreted as like, you're a locker room veteran, you could have
I would prefer they explain it like that rather than the disciplinary committee. But last week when he said that no one wanted me back here, including you. I think people, that was more clear cut of what was being referenced, but okay. States that it's not going to be a happy ending this Saturday. And it ends with Matt Jackson stating they will do anything to make sure the AEW title comes back to the Elite.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing that line. I'm thinking more about the John Moxley association now with the Elite. You know, could doing anything mean an association with John Moxley so that Moxley could win the belt off of Bryan for the Elite?
I guess there's something of like if Moxley gets involved.
Man, I think that would piss a lot of people off for Moxley to be tied into this entire like Elite takeover type of story.
Yeah.
And then Shane McMahon shows up and he's the mastermind of it all.
Yeah, none of this sounds really compelling stuff to me. I don't know. The Elite stuff to me has really passed its expiration date for me. And I think it's been a detriment because all these people should be in a better scenario than they are. In particular, I think the Young Bucks. I think this story has really just made them non-entities on this show. And that's quite remarkable that they're in this role that I just feel has felt tired. Jack Perry has, I think, benefited in this role since coming back, and this is a very big match on Saturday, but he is kind of in this role, the first title challenger, and what people are, even with the caveat of teasing Danielson's career, like nobody is treating that as his career is on the line Saturday.
Yeah.
So the final match is a six-man tag. Danielson is out on commentary. It is Pac, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta, the trios champions, in a non-title match with Will Ospreay, Kyle O'Reilly, and Orange Cassidy. And if you do go back, absolutely watch the last 5 minutes of this show, but also rewind to watch Kyle O'Reilly play the air guitar for Will Ospreay's entrance and Orange Cassidy's reaction to Kyle O'Reilly's air guitar playing and then like playing the bongos on top of it. This man is he's a unique cat. That's all I can say.
Watch them during entrances. I think is starting to become a thing because they had a really nice interaction with Hologram as well on Collision.
That's right. So Danielson says that Ospreay might be the best wrestler he's ever been in the ring with. And we get this great sequence with Pac and Ospreay very early on as they tease you with the match that is coming up on Saturday. Excalibur at one point threatens to chat with Danielson about economic exclusion zones, but we didn't go that far during any of the picture-in-picture breaks. And then we continue on here, and Claudio ends up launching Yuta off the top onto Cassidy for a two count. Ospreay and Pac are in again, and we get a sky twister press from Ospreay off of Kyle's back. And then Cassidy comes off Kyle's back with a light elbow drop onto Pac that Danielson tried to defend by stating, yeah, it might look silly, but he's putting all of his weight into that elbow. It's deceptive.
Can you say that's untrue?
Maybe he just totally like sandbagged and came off the back with this elbow drop, and it was a real devastating maneuver from Orange Cassidy. Then we saw Orange Cassidy do his multiple rotation into a DDT on Pac, who I thought this guy like severed his spine taking this. He snapped in like half. He did like this crazy like yoga stretch by taking this. It was the most insane selling of this DDT I've seen. Then Claudio blocks his own and hits Cassidy with a jackhammer. Danielson's just in awe of this man's strength. And after multiple dives to the floor, they end up on the ramp, and Yuta attacks Ospreay. Ospreay goes for the hidden blade when Pac tries once again to hit him with the poison rana on the stage, but this time Will blocks it, sends Pac off the stage, and hits a cannonball, and those two end up fighting to the back as Cassidy and Claudio return to the ring. Kyle and Cassidy double-team Claudio. That leads to a beach break. Claudio kicks out, and then Kyle does like a liver kick right into an arm in guillotine, and Claudio is fighting and fighting this guillotine. And finally, he attempts to press him in the air for an uppercut, at least attempted to, and then hits the giant swing as Yuta hits the sit-out dropkick and Claudio pins Kyle in a pretty spectacular six-man tag. That went 19 minutes.
Wow. This was a great match. You know, these Conglomeration Trios matches, I mean, at this point, the Conglomeration really are like, I guess they almost feel like the Hantai of AEW, where it's just sort of like all your baby faces without any like real place to go, just join the Conglomeration. And I'm there for it. Okay. If it means that we can get these like occasional matches with like talent as incredible as Orange Cassidy with Kyle O'Reilly, and then you throw in like a Will Ospreay in there, like these end up feeling like all-star matches, you know, all-star games. And of course, like having Pac with the BCC, Pac fits in so well with the BCC style. I think they should already, like, you know, have made him a permanent member. Just do it right now. So this match just like ended up being a lot of fun. You're almost guaranteed amazing quality when you just kind of like throw in all of these incredibly strong wrestlers from AEW's roster together like this. Just a great trios match. I thought Cassidy was the MVP of the match, but it also ended up being a great teaser for Ospreay versus Pac. By the end of this, I wasn't really thinking about Ricochet at all.
Ricochet was noticeably absent on the show, and I can only imagine he's not figured into the pay-per-view, which, yeah. I don't know, very confusing introduction of Ricochet, I have to say. Like, I just think they've... Not to say like this is, you know, disaster, but yeah. I think they've really just the timing of it, and it almost just felt like they wanted to get him on Wembley. And like, does he feel like that this fresh, hot product that you've just brought in? Like, he almost feel like he is assimilated to the roster in record time.
Yeah, I think that was exactly it. They wanted him on the big stage on Wembley, which I think it was a fine decision to make. But because of the awkward timing to All Out, I don't know why you wouldn't like build something for him immediately after All In to get to All Out.
Like just put him in. They could have done him and Kyle Fletcher on Saturday, like instead of doing it on TV last week.
I agree.
Like, Ricochet's first match to me should have been a really big deal. And it doesn't even look like they could throw him onto the show, but it's going to be very cold if they do that Friday.
Yeah.
Danielson celebrates in the ring with the BCC when the Elite attack, and this is where it's noticeable, it's 4-on-3, and you are, like, this is the kind of, like, subtlety in AEW that it's screaming, where is Jon Moxley, that I think most people got.
Excalibur also brought up on commentary to Danielson about, I guess, like, the sort of awkwardness going on in the BCC. He did mention Mox, but Bryan Danielson did not talk about Moxley.
Yeah. Good catch. And Jack Perry winds up a chair and to a target that you absolutely knew was not taking any chair shot to the head. And then Claudio ends up saving his partner and takes the chair away. And the Bucks pull Jack Perry to safety. And Claudio says that you kids just made the biggest mistake of your life. And Claudio is in the habit of picking up gold, noting his recent Grand Prix win in CMLL, the Trios tag titles, and him and Yuta have nothing to do at All Out. So they challenge the Young Bucks, and this was great because Claudio's challenging them, and they show the Bucks, and Nick is like nodding, okay. And Excalibur's like, what are they going to say? They don't want the match. And then we had to have Tony Khan intervene 3 minutes later and made it official. So that's happening on the show with the tag titles at stake. But then we cut to the... First, Danielson says that he is sick and tired of Jack Perry, and he guarantees that this Sunday, I hope he knows when the pay-per-view is, Jack Perry will get his fucking head kicked in.
Oh, they could be going on after midnight. Is that possible?
Yeah, I wonder if this... chat room, let us know. Did this go uncensored on TBS?
I meant when he said Sunday.
Oh, on Sunday, yeah. I mean, Tony Khan probably wants to censor that more so than...
I'm saying, could the match be on after midnight?
Sorry. I think they'll start the match before.
But they're
midnight.
In Chicago.
It could go after midnight.
But they're in Chicago, which is
an hour behind. It's going to be definitely Saturday.
Okay, right. So.
There's no saving Danielson here. Way. They cut to Ospreay and Pac fighting backstage with Pac hitting a brainbuster on an equipment box to Will.
This is so crazy, these two.
The immediate question from one of the, I think it's Excalibur, is he going to be 100% on Saturday? It's like, yeah, he'll be fine. And Pac yells, "I warned you, William. Underestimate me at your own peril. See you Saturday."
Yeah. Well, they're going to be, they're not in the main event, of course, John. So, you know, they will be there. I'm suddenly looking forward to Ospreay versus Pac a lot more than I did, you know, last week. I mean, I think last week I was thinking so much Ricochet, Ospreay. Pac versus Ospreay, I think is going to be the match of the night.
Is there a saving grace that it, Ospreay retains and then it's the reversal, Ricochet comes out after Will's match? Like the reversal from last week when Will came out, and you do leave the pay-per-view with that tease of the match.
The match has already been teased, though. I mean, is it going to get that much of a bigger pop?
Well, it got teased and then pulled away from you last week.
But so the idea is
he beats Pac. Pac is out of the way, and then Ricochet comes out, and they
what? To just look at each other?
They do exactly what they did with like Roxanne and Julia.
But they, I guess so. I wouldn't be that encouraged, though, because the week prior when they did it, I don't think the reaction was that large.
That was a very bad crowd. I would hope Chicago would be more amped for it, but I do know what you mean. Like, they did take a bit of the air out of the sails last week. Then we have the announcement that Collision will have an all-star eight-man match of champions. That's a mouthful. Bryan Danielson, Pac, Yuta, and Claudio against the Young Bucks, Kazuchika Okada, and Jack Perry.
Sounds like a great match.
That's the show I'm covering. Shivani hosts the greatest contract signing in pro wrestling history. It will never be topped. I think the trope should be retired after tonight. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Swerve and Nana come out first, and Hangman's music plays. No Hangman. They play it a second time. No Hangman. I'm waiting for the one time the music plays, and then they play it a second time, and the guy, sorry, and he comes out on the second playing of the music. I don't think that's ever happened.
No, huh? Sure, a novel idea. Yeah, they should say
so that. They're waiting, and they're waiting, and then Paige appears on the screen, and you know exactly where he is, and as soon as I see this, and I connect this to the video, I think this is the most brilliant connection. Talk about an angle that started this afternoon and is going to have this amazing payoff. And I'm watching this thinking, oh, okay, he's breaking into the house. Little did I know. And
I'll just say for me, I mean, I think it was one of the things that you would immediately think about the moment Swerve showed us that video. We can't have our heroes have a happy ending in wrestling. And there was just something about that particular video that was just almost so uncharacteristically sappy for a Swerve storyline.
But I wasn't thinking angle alert when I saw that video. I
was like right away, and it's great. It's great because I think you'll have varied reactions to it. I think also, after doing a little bit more research, it seems like somebody who was working, one of the firefighters who was working on this scene had unfortunately spoiled it on Reddit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, showing a photo of the set itself, saying that I'm shooting something for AEW, and it was quickly taken off, but enough people saw it.
Wow, that's the Reddit. So he enters Swerve's house, says, "Why do I need to sign a contract for something we both know is going to happen?" Fine logic for these contract signings. Mentions Swerve's fiance, his kids, and says, "You have more to your life than just in being in the ring," and said, "You let it slip by showing me something that was important to you, your childhood home." And we're doing cutaways to Swerve, and he knows what's coming. Swerve was very good in the reactions here. They could have been very cheesy, but I thought Swerve reacted It wasn't like the silly, oh, I'm going to run to the back and try and sprint.
Well, where the hell is he going?
Well, like, how many times have we seen that, though? How many times have we seen that? You're multiple states away, and the guy runs to the back.
The difference is, though, usually we see it when somebody invades somebody's home with their family there, right? And you would run to the back to call your family members. This is an empty home.
So he speaks about Swerve's parents and says, I bet your father didn't love you very much and regrets having you. And what a wonderful world it would be if you were never born. And then you see the gasoline start to pour all over the house. He said, you told me to make a decision between hate and success. You came to my home and saw me taking my pregnant wife to the hospital, and I had to choose between vengeance and peace. And I told you that there was nothing I wanted more out of this life than to burn your world to the ground. I will take what is left of you on Saturday. I'll take your pride, your dignity. You will be begging for mercy, and I'm not going to give it to you. So Swerve, you can say goodbye to the AEW title. You can say goodbye to your health, your career, your happiness. And tonight, you get to practice by saying goodbye to Swerve's house. And this man sits down in this chair.
Like a lazy boy.
A lazy boy.
Yeah.
Lights up a stick. And
a match, John, a stick.
Well, a match. That's a big fucking match.
They make big matches, yeah.
Well, he then proceeded to light the entire place on fire.
Dude, he did this in like sort of like Roadrunner style, where like there's like a trail of gas, and he so casually didn't even look back, lit up this giant match and just threw it into the trail of gas that immediately incinerated this entire thing. It was a very impressive setup and explosion.
As I've said many times, I'm a very boring person to watch wrestling with. I'm very quiet. I don't talk. I was howling. I was laughing so hard I was watching this, because dude, he's just sitting there as amazing. This whole thing is going up in flames. I thought this guy was going to be engulfed and that was going to be the end of this. Swerves on his knees and Paige just sits back and he has a drink. Dude, I don't know if this is selling one more pay-per-view buy, but goddamn was I entertained by this. I thought this was
how could you not think this would be selling any more pay-per-views?
Because, dude, this was so way over the top, and I could see a lot of people way over not enjoying this.
Do we forget how this entire thing started, John?
Okay. Wait, you don't have to convince me. I thought the tying of this to that video, and more importantly, that Swerve, this was just his comeuppance for what he had pushed Hangman to do. I thought this was great, but I don't doubt for a second that there will be people that just think this is...
If you are one of those people, you're not watching AEW anyway. You would have been turned off a long time ago, and you're probably at this point only watching for things that you can complain about on the internet. If you're already on board with this entire thing that started from this guy threatening his children in his crib, to the other guy drinking this dude's blood, to now burning his house, this perfectly fits everything.
I enjoyed this a lot. I thought this was a great angle. I thought that they have done all the legwork to get to this, where... had they just done this out of the blue, this would have been totally ridiculous. But all of it has, like, this has been the descent of Hangman Page to become an arsonist on national television.
Page's character evolution, I think, is so perfectly logical. And it's been so incredibly well told. It's been so incredibly well performed. Like, here's a man who really was a good guy. He, like, you know, he was on our side. We were on his side. All of a sudden, he has his family threatened, and we cheer for the guy who threatened his family. That should be enough to drive everybody crazy, right? And I think this descent to madness has been perfectly, like... understandable, and it's led up to this point where he's now become the villain, where he's now become evil, and to a level that I don't know if even Swerve, you know, is capable of. All those arguments about, like, Swerve threatening Paige's kids being an irredeemable act, well, I would say they're kind of even now, and we can now fully embrace Hangman Page as the lead bad guy in this feud.
you know where I will see there are going to be people that the knee jerk is the visual of this does harken back to the whole Randy Orton story with the Wyatts. I think people are going to draw. Well, that's going to be people's knee jerk reaction to these kinds of angles. That's all I say, Wei, is
as a point of criticism for this.
Oh, Wei, I watch every morsel of AEW programming with the idea of how
who
is this?
Cares about them? Who cares about those people?
I want to get into the psyche.
Well, that ended up being a match inside one of these homes that was completely awful. I don't think they're going to have a match inside this abandoned home with ghosts and shit.
What was the crowd chanting at the end? Could you make it out?
They're chanting, "This is arson," instead of "This is awesome."
That's great. Which I was trying to make it
very
out.
Funny.
Yeah. That's a very good chant. I love this segment. I thought it was terrific.
Great segment.
I thought this segment, and I thought the Daniel Garcia segment, I thought Ospreay and Pac really intensified their match as well going into this. And this is the updated line. We have 8 matches thus far. Bryan Danielson and Jack Perry for the AEW Championship. The Young Bucks against Claudio and Yuta. Okada and the 3 winners on Collision. Mercedes Moné and Hikaru Shida. MJF and Daniel Garcia. Swerve Strickland against Hangman Page in the Steel Cage Lights Out match. And Willow Nightingale versus Chris Statlander, Chicago Street Fight, and Ospreay against Pac. And more matches to come, I am sure.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the threat of Danielson possibly retiring from full-time action as a result of losing the championship, like, should have the biggest stakes. But Swerve versus Page, you know, is the biggest program, especially after an angle like this.
It's a lights-out match. Like, you have to...
Right. Okay, so that's the justification. That'll main event then.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I would be perfectly content with these 8 matches, but I think we're going to get much more.
Tony Khan wants you to, I guess, get your money's worth, and that means,
Money's worth. I would be so satisfied with 8 matches here that are all going to have time, and they will all of them have the potential to be solid. Like, I don't see any match here where I have grand concerns over.
Yeah. I think it's been, like, I don't know why AEW continues. I do understand, like, what is it, the holiday being, like, a big sort of reason why Tony continues to want to, like, put it on Labor Day. But now you're doing it a week after Labor Day, so does it even still make sense anymore? You know? Like, why handicap yourself like this when you can tell, I think, much bigger stories, you know, with a lot of this stuff? Now, all that said, I think they've done a really good job in these 2 weeks to kind of flesh out, you know, these sort of storylines. A lot of them were already in the works prior to this, of course, like Willow versus Statlander.
The only thing that's coming together quick here is Moné and Shida and the Young Bucks, Claudio Yuta. Everything else... preceded this.
Perry, like, Danielson is a bit of a
One goes back to him pinning Danielson like months ago. Like, yeah, it's coming together. I understand what you mean, but it's also like Perry was not just picked out of a random name.
Okay. Yes, you're right. I'll give you that. But as far as like title changes, okay, like, or at least like big significant stakes and people that you can actually see changing the course of the company in some way by winning a championship, I don't know if there's anything like that on the show, with the exception of Paige and Strickland having like real stakes attached to the winner. Danielson Perry is very predictable. I would say Ospreay and Pac is pretty predictable as well. Moné Shida is predictable. MJF Garcia, I kind of think, is predictable too. So, you know, what are the sort of like game changing matches with a lot on the line here?
I'm really intrigued by MJF and Daniel Garcia. I think that this is one of those where I think it's going to be a very interesting match, because and a lot of it is, do you have Daniel Garcia signed or not? That would be a big decision for me if you do or don't, of how you handle that match.
So you could see MJF actually losing this one despite already losing to Ospreay.
You already have the reason. Like, he just took this Tiger Driver, and I think now is, like, that to me is more than the championship matches. It's established guys against people that are on their way up, that those are perceived as bigger wins than winning championships a lot of the time in AEW, because I don't see that dynamic in a lot of these title matches, but in Elevation, I think like Garcia and MJF, that is something meaningful because the audience knows what a Daniel Garcia win would mean for him on a pay-per-view.
I don't hate that at all. Yeah, I think that would be a pretty ballsy booking decision. I think it's for me, it's more likely that they'll have Garcia look like he's about to win and then just have MJF cheat somehow. But I am curious to see what they follow up Garcia with after this, because I really want to see him stay at this level.
All right. Well, there was Dynamite, a quick turnaround from All In. And again, on Friday night, we will have Way covering SmackDown. I will do Collision and same time as usual, 10 Eastern on Friday night. But we have Feedback Way.
And that, of course, that is an exclusive show on the Post Wrestling Cafe, which is our Patreon. $6 a month gets you access to Rewind and SmackDown every single Friday. Collision Course most Fridays, with the exception of this week, of course. And then MCU Later, Rewind Away coming out this Thursday, and our entire archive of bonus shows. So if you like these shows, want to support us, $6 a month, get yourself some bonus shows at postwrestlingcafe.com. Another way to support us, of course, is by joining us live here at youtube.com/postwrestling and sending in a super chat. And we want to thank Matt Hahn, who sends $5 to say, who do you think should win between Hangman and Swerve? I think Hangman. Think it would be better for his character.
I do too. I think that Hangman should get the win over Swerve, and I think it sets up a lot for the future. Going forward, that would be my thought, is Hangman gets this definitive win at the end of it.
I like that idea as well. I think he's just really been able to recreate himself into like a much more menacing version of himself. And all of a sudden, I think you've already done a great job of establishing Swerve at a high level. Now Hangman is matching him in that intensity. And I think you got to run with that. You know, this is a Hangman that I want to see as a future champion at some point. And I want to see Swerve get his revenge somewhere down the line as well. Like, this is a feud that I think could go on for years. It has to at this point. Look what they've done to each other.
Go back to the first promo that Swerve cut on Hangman, and he's talking about how he's not motivated, he's not hitting the gym, he's lost that fire in him. Sorry to make the obvious pun.
Found it.
He has rekindled that spark. This ties in. Like, at the end of it, now you've got this killer that has come out of it that is more determined than ever, like this monster that you have created.
This is a program that I think we will look back on as a clear sort of career rivalry for both of them. They both made each other so much better. So yeah, I think Hangman should win this one personally. Thank you very much for that super chat. Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com, John.
Benjamin writes, I thought it was a little predictable after the segment earlier in the show. The payoff of Hangman burning down Swerve's house was well worth it. A great segment. Looking forward to All Out. I hope their attendance and ratings start rising again. They've been putting on good shows.
Do you know the number for All Out at present?
Six or seven? It was around 6,500, which hopefully they hit seven. You would think maybe they get a last minute bump for it, which is by these days, like, you'll take seven for an AEW show. But Friday night is only like, God, they're like under 2,500.
Let's go to Mark, who says, I think it's safe to assume that the AEW but WBD media rights renewal was locked up with a nice increase. You generally don't burn down a house for an angle if you don't have the money to, pardon the pun, burn. Yeah, well, again, like, realistically, how much do you think a house like that would cost?
Why don't you call your realtor and ask them, if you wanted to burn your house down, what would the...
Like, is that within the budget? I mean, for Tony Khan, sure it is, you know? Like, what costs more, okay?
That or Europe.
Exactly. Like, to burn down a house or to pay for the final countdown? Probably Europe.
You think so?
I think yeah. Yeah.
Then this is a small...
Small price
to pay. Yeah. Andrew from Cape Breton. Tonight's show was pretty lit. Great fire it was. Okay, let's get them all in here. Usually we don't get okay, he just keeps going and going here with the fire puns. So I'm not sure how to feel about this ending angle. One of the things about the original home invasion was it was kept serious, despite the absurdity of it being a part of a wrestling program. I'm wondering if tonight stepped over the line as the crowd chanted at the end of the show, "This is arson." On one hand, I'm reminded of the time Randy Orton burned down Bray Wyatt's house. But an angle like that was always cartoony. Nothing about Swerve and Hangman has been cartoonish, and I can understand Hangman's twisted motivation. I think what is setting it over the top for me on the realism scale is normally in wrestling, wrestlers don't press charges because they just want to fight in the ring. However, this guy could also end up setting other places on fire by accident and would be charged regardless of whose house he burnt down. Folks, in another universe, Bronson Reed would be arrested for attempted murder on Braun Strowman.
But listen, yeah,
you know what would be a killer is if Swerve didn't have insurance on the house.
Well, he just bought it, okay? I don't know.
He might have just bought it like sight unseen and just didn't have his paperwork done.
So, but I disagree with this poster when he said that this is, you know, the first angle somehow was kept serious, but this was not serious. Okay, the crowd chanted, "This is arson," because that's what kind of crowds do. They like look for witty chants, all right? I don't think that as an indication that this was not serious. We had Swerve Strickland tell us exactly what this place means to him. This is a lifelong goal of his, to buy off the house that his parents couldn't afford. It means everything to him, deeper than any championship we could ever imagine. And Paige took that away. You know, like for all the people that I think complain about like the bead, the bracelet. This was way more meaningful and way more devastating to somebody than having their bracelet broken. You know, they burned down their childhood home. So I would say this is very serious. Your reaction to it, I guess, could vary, but for me, like I felt it was like heartbreaking for Swerve.
Do you think that this was the type of angle that would have spurred on people that now I'm buying this show? Because that's what you were attempting to do here, and I just don't know if people like I was entertained by this.
Your attempt is to try to build interest in the feud, and that's going to vary for everybody about whether or not like they're going to pay money coming off of it as a result. And I don't even know if like Tony Khan can control that much. What he can do is try to get us interested in the feud and get us talking about it. And I thought this was one of those angles that did. All right, let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, the roof is on fire. Yes. This feud is still fire. Okay. Given that the video of Swerve reclaiming his childhood home was first put online hours ago, I guess that gave Hangman enough time to have any real estate friends search for recent closings and find the address. Bookending tonight's Dynamite with heating up MJF versus Garcia and heating up Swerve versus Hangman in the cage was good go-home television to me. Even with more space between All In and All Out this year, things still seemed a bit rushing getting the All Out card together, but I'm still looking forward to it a lot. Jon Moxley not being rushed into a pay-per-view match is smart, as they let whatever he has planned with Darby play out, making me think that Darby returns to TV. When he returns to TV, the crowd will explode. Very fun trios match. Glad Takeshita is pretty much guaranteed to be on the pay-per-view with Okada. I don't know about... Well, okay, yeah, in the four-way match, yeah. I think Kyle Fletcher has really shined as a solo act. If Mark Davis ever returns, I can see Aussie Open taking the same route as Rascals and MSK recently did, teaming up again briefly before splitting up violently. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think you've done too much with Kyle Fletcher to go back to the tag team whenever Mark Davis is ready. I don't mean that ends. Like, there's other things you could do with Mark Davis. As we've seen the other way around, when Kyle Fletcher was hurt and Mark Davis had to fill in for him in New Japan. But yeah, I just think at this point, they've gone too hard with him in the singles role, that to just revert back to Aussie Open, I think, would be several steps back.
Yeah. It's got to be tough. Like, if you're Mark Davis and you're seeing your partner like ascend to these incredible levels as a single star, I really do hope for their sake they have a good story for him coming back, because I think there's great potential in that sort of like uncertainty and tension and potential jealousy type of storylines. So I hope that they find a way to bring Mark Davis up to Kyle Fletcher's level.
That could be your match for Grand Slam if you play your cards right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if it times out well. Muggin writes, home invasions, staples and faces, swigging blood and now arson. Hangman might run away with hater of the year by going scorched earth on Whose house? Swerve's house. I like how this is, it's like a copy that we're reading just for the pay-per-view open. I shudder to think how the cage match will surpass the Texas death match. It should go on last at All Out. Get some body bags ready. The depravity meter is about to break. The rest of the show hummed along decently. The six-man was predictably the best match with Okada Fletcher in second place.
And lastly, let's go to Jordan from the Bronx, who says Hangman and Swerve continues to be one of the defining feuds in the company's history. The second that they showed Swerve buying his childhood home, I knew that it was not going to exist by the end of the show. Hangman's selfie monologue walking through the house while pouring gasoline was brilliant. These two guys can feud off and on forever. I'll never get tired of it. Unless I missed it, did Danielson mention Mox at all on commentary? I don't believe he did. Are we to assume that Mox is no longer in BCC? I think they're deliberately keeping it a mystery. Right.
Very
now.
So. Very yeah. much so.
Or is Mox opening up a different wing in the dojo with Marina Shafir? Is Pac down with BCC? I would say he is. Interested to see where all of this ends up. Unrelated to Dynamite, the Sid Udy audio retrospective was very well done. This is, of course, something John released on the Post Wrestling Cafe last week. As a child in early 1992, I was completely awestruck by his look and intensity. He was my favorite childhood wrestler until this day. Hold him in high regard. For those that may not understand the phenomenon that he was, there's a YouTube video highlighting his path of destruction from the 92 Rumble to WrestleMania 8. The barbershop destruction, walking away from Hogan at Saturday night's main event, and various jobber squashes were what formed my wrestling fandom. Sid was a one-of-a-kind performer. Rest in peace.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jordan. And thanks to all of you for dropping in with your feedback tonight. We will be chatting with you on Thursday on the Post Wrestling Cafe with Rewind Away number 164. We're chatting WWE Beast in the East and then coming back on the cafe Friday night with Rewind to SmackDown and concluding the week with All Out on Saturday. Also in the next couple of days, Post Pro Res is coming out late Thursday, early Friday morning with WH Park and Karen Peterson. So you can look out for that as well. Plenty coming your way at postwrestling.com. A lot of stories up on the site today from Jack Wannan, from Andrew Thompson, Neil Flanagan, the whole crew, keeping you up to date on everything that's happening in professional.
And Up Next was also presented a special Wednesday edition as well.
Yes.
A special hangover edition of Up Next, literally.
Yes, a happy birthday to one Davey Portman, who is now 35 years of age. So hear how his post-birthday went on Wednesday morning when they had to get up and do a show together. That is it for us. We'll speak with you many more times this week. And that concludes Rewind to Dynamite.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.